A.C. Green was dying of congestive heart failure. His doctors told him his only chance at survival was a new heart. 2 years ago, at the age of 64, he became the first patient in a new heart transplant program at the St. Paul Medical Center in Dallas. His memoir, Taking Heart, is the story of his operation and recovery. Green is an essayist and columnist for the Dallas Morning News. He also teaches English at the University of North Texas in Denton. Green says you have to adjust to the beat of a new heart.
A transplanted heart tends to take a little bit longer to warm up and tends to take a little bit longer to settle down. For example, I walk out of the studio here and I may have to take a couple of steps and stop, but then my heart catches up. One of the reasons is that when your old heart is taken out, all the nerves around the heart must be cut surgically. And, of course, at this point, we're still not able to reattach those tiny, tiny nerves. So the heart doesn't have its automatic system. The brain has to tell it, okay, get going. And that takes three or four beats.
The heart is metaphorically always thought of as the emotional center of any person. Have you had to stop looking at the heart in any metaphorical way?
No, it's kind of like the moon. You know, 1969, we put men on the moon. Well, I feel the same way about the heart. It may be a different heart. It may be a new heart, a better heart. But it's still my heart in that metaphorical sense that you mentioned. In other words, if I break my heart, it still can be broken. If I lose my heart, it still can be lost.
Now, you don't know whose heart you got.
I don't know who it is. I do know that it was a man because of my size. I'm about 5'10 and a half and weigh about 180, so I had to have a little larger heart. Hearts have no race, no gender, so if a big woman had been available, I might have gotten her heart. But I just know it was a man, and I understand he was about 31 years old at the time that I got the heart.
You know, in your book, you describe your condition by saying that your heart was dying. And I thought it was very interesting that you'd say your heart was dying instead of saying that you were dying. And I thought, in a way, this was the ultimate mind-body split.
Well, once again, that's the metaphor of the heart. I didn't think about my body dying. And at the time that it was that the heart was probably at its worst point, not at its worst point, but when it was dying most, I was not thinking about me dying. I had detached myself almost from the heart as an organ. I felt as if I had two hearts. One of them was a physical organ, which was really getting bad, but the other one was a kind of overview of my whole self, that secondary definition of heart, which the dictionary uses.
When you were waiting for a heart, how were things prioritized? How was it decided which heart was going to be yours, and who would come first on the waiting list?
Well, that's a real problem as far as the general transplant program across the nation is concerned. In my case, it wasn't quite that difficult since I was number one. I was the only one in this new program who was waiting on a heart. Of course, the first consideration in a heart is size and blood type, so that they had to find a heart that was big enough to keep me going, but not so big that it got crowded into that space. In the book, Dr. Ring says, it's just a simple matter of making four cuts. Well, of course, that may be true, four cuts to get the old heart going out and then putting the new one in and getting it going. But at that point, the patient is really embarking on the true transplant life, because after 2 weeks or so, your medication is what's keeping you going. As a matter of fact, I'm still very, very careful. I have twice a day at 9 a.m., 9 p.m., I have to take cyclosporin and take a lot of other medications. I take 22 pills and two liquids, as a matter of fact, per day. But it doesn't bother me in the slightest, since the alternative is not too pleasant to contemplate.
Could you give us a sense of what just the hospitalization and the surgical procedure cost you and what you had to pay after insurance?
Well, my insurance is the kind that you have a certain amount you have to pay initially. Then it goes to, I believe there's $2,000 you have to pay on a 30-70 basis. And then after that, it's complete coverage. So my initial cost was something like about $10,000 or $12,000. Now, that was just for the hospitalization and the insurance going in. Also, that includes a lot of flying around I had to do. I had to fly down to Houston two or three times and back. But I would estimate that after over a period of years, unless things change greatly in the next two or three years, a transplant of any kind, liver, heart, lung, that sort of thing, will run well above $200,000 total. That's hospital, surgeon, medication, all that sort of thing.
Can you share with us some of the things that went through your mind during the 7 months that you waited for a heart?
Well, at first I was very hopeful. I was in the Houston program, Dr. Cooley's program in Houston, and they used to call every week and say, well, we still don't have your heart. And they had their transplant meeting every Monday. And the coordinator would call my wife and say, oh, Ms. Green, we talked about AC today. We just can't get him a heart. We can't get one a suitable heart. And then when I transferred to the New Dallas program, they said, that's fine because maybe you can get one quicker up there. And as a matter of fact, I did, even though I didn't get one immediately even then. But as I got weaker and weaker, I began to realize that to me, and this begins to be very philosophical, I wouldn't demand that the listeners agree with everything I say, but I will say this. Someone waiting for a transplant, any kind of heart, any kind of open heart surgery, any kind of what I call terminal possibility, has to have something to hold on to. You have to believe in something, whether it's God or philosophy or the surgeon or the medical technique. Something you have to hold on to because you are literally at sea. There gets to be a point when nobody can tell you anything. Your doctor can't even tell you anything except when we get a heart, if it works, you'll feel better. And so I would say the last 2 months of my waiting, when I was really living in my own separate world, even though my children were trying to be helpful and were very helpful, and my wife was actually dedicating virtually every hour of the day to me, I still had to have something that I could believe in, some reason to stay alive. And I just kind of developed some old down-to-earth philosophy right then that life is good and the best way to live it is to be as useful as you can be and quit getting. In fact, I've said, I don't fall into the stress pool.
In your book, you write that after the heart surgery, you ended up crying a lot for the first, I don't know, a few days or a few weeks after. Do you know why?
Well, that was a few days. I think that what I was doing, I was kind of asking myself forgiveness for all the wasted things I might have done prior to my heart. I don't want to sound religious or that kind of philosophically inclined, but I felt so good, and at the same time, I wish that things could have been better. I'd had a very happy life. I'd been married at that time. My wife at that time, she and I had been married about 35, 38 years. And I felt, and my children were all around me and they loved me. And I'd had, and I just suddenly realized that I'd been kind of mean with myself. And of course, if you're mean with yourself, you tend to be mean with other people. So I just, I was crying, asking myself forgiveness, I guess. But on the other hand, there were tears of joy. I just felt like I had a new life. I'd been given a second chance. And, you know, all of us, from time to time, we talk about a second chance. But to really have a second chance, really get one and recognize it, somebody said, well, how long do you think you're going to live? I don't know. When have I ever known how long I was going to live, or any of us? But at least I'm going to live every minute of it that I can.
Have you signed over any of your organs in case of your death?
I have signed a donor card. In fact, I've joked with the organ bank people in Dallas a lot of times about, well, look, this heart's only 33. If I go the hard way someday, I said, maybe we can give it to a third person. I said, I don't think it's picked up any bad habits with me because I said, so anything else, I'm of an age that mostly what they would use as far as parts is concerned, to put it in rather blunt terms, is it would be skin, tissue, and that sort of thing, possibly something from the eyes, and of course any organ they wanted. At age 66, I think my organs are in pretty good shape.
So if you don't mind my asking, what did the doctors tell you about how long you could expect to live as a heart transplant person?
At one point, 20 years was the record, but I haven't even tried to keep up the last couple of years. I suspect that I might have a pretty good future. I'm not even going to try to put it to the calendar. I will say one thing. Right after I got my heart and I knew it was going to work, I said to the doctor, I said, "Ring, I'm 64 now. Can I live to be 100? And he smiled and he says, "Well, your heart can if you can keep up with it." So I just use that as my rule.
Well, I wish you very good health. And thank you very much for talking with us.
I've enjoyed it.
A.C. Green's memoir is Taking Heart,